You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon. If you look at any dictionary of songwriters, you'll find right at the front a little cluster of 1920s men whose names begin with the letter A. All three represent perfectly the type of journeyman writer who never aspired to the kind of social fame of the Porters and the Gershwins, who never had too much to do with Broadway first nights and integrated scores, but who had the knack of turning out memorable little melodies and lyrics that people enjoyed singing and whistling. The trio consists of Fred Arlott, Milton Ager and Harry Axt, and it's Mr. Axt whose anniversary now turns up. Axt, who was born in 1894, died on the last day of March 1963, having enjoyed a happy life and a fairly good catalogue of songs. He was one of several writers whose family background sounds a lot like those sentimental Hollywood biopics about immigrant kids whose parents dream of a career as a great soloist for their child, only to see him slip into the kind of world where men spit their tobacco juice into each other's derby hats and think nothing of picking the pockets of every composer dead enough not to care. Axt's father was a violinist in a Russian symphony orchestra. He came to America and continued that career. One routine biography even claims for the old boy ownership of a Stradivarius, although how that stands up in the context of cabbage soup and communal underwear, I'm not sure. Axt was a precocious child, first piano recital when he was 10. At 16, he was playing for local parties. But the old man didn't really give up the ghost until Axt went off as an accompanist to Nora Bays. After that, it was all over. In the First World War, Axt got tangled up with Sergeant Irving Berlin, and when the war was over, he began writing songs with Benny Davis, the lyricist, if you remember, famed for rhyming moon with cheese and June with waterfall, dispensing the kind of easy philosophy which was part of Tin Pan Alley's staple diet in the years just after the First World War. In a parody of the sentimental songs of those years, P.G. Wodehouse once wrote an entire lyric entitled Mother's Knee, which is all about some Jolsonian yammerer who dreams of being back on that Oedipal perch, a kind of mummy boy, I suppose you could call it. And that was the kind of business Axt's generation was in. Although it was a far cry from his father's dreams of a concert career, it has left us with a few songs we don't particularly care to forget. The best of them came a kind of jazz and cabaret classic, and it came out of a very early sound picture called On With The Show, which is really a very significant picture indeed, although nobody ever mentions it. On With The Show was the first ever all-talking musical in colour. But apart from that, it was a bit like the parodies in Singing in the Rain. In one scene, they placed the microphone so ingeniously that when the chorus girls are singing and dancing, the noise of the tapping feet completely obliterates the sound of the music. And what's worse, the leading lady, Betty Compson, was such a dummy that they had to dub her voice with a proper singer and use distance shots for her dancing so somebody else could actually impersonate her. So why was Miss Compson there at all? Who knows, except that we have to remember that Miss Compson was a powerful political figure, being the girlfriend of the mayor of New York. Anyway, On With The Show had this one good song by Axt and the lyricist Grant Clark.
Am I blue? Am I blue? Ain't these tears in these eyes telling you? Am I blue? You'd be too if each scheme with your dream done fell through. Was a time I was the only one, but now I'm the sad and lonely one. So lonely was I gay till today. Now she's gone and we're through. Am I blue? a time I was the only one, but now I'm the sad and lonely one. So lonely was I gay till today. Now she is gone and we're through. Am I blue? Am I blue? Am I blue? I'm so blue.
Am I Blue, the best known of the songs of Harry Axt, whose career petered out in Hollywood, where he wrote songs for pictures for years and years without really registering on anybody's imagination very much. He did a lot of things in his time, and in the Second World War completed several dangerous missions by touring American forces overseas as an accompanist to Al Jolson. Not one of the great writers, but still somebody whose work is remembered from time to time. A writer who created a much bigger impression was a man who arrived on March the 29th, 1878, to discover that the family already had a songwriter. Harry von Tilzer was already six when Albert came along, and I think six was a big start in those precocious days. Albert happens to be in my mind because an album has just been reissued in America, which includes a good example of his work. Albert wrote the tune to this one, although it's generally agreed that the words are by Leo Robin. Interestingly, a third credits there to another writer called Irving Bebo. As to the album, it's become rather a collector's item, fetching all sorts of fancy prices, although why it should ever have been allowed to lapse into deletion is beyond me. I do hope British companies take the hint and make it available once again. Here's a sample of it.
Sounds like a train song, if you ask me.
My cutie's due at 2:22. She's coming through on a big choo-choo.
That should be train.
She's been away for months.
Did she?
But I haven't cheated once.
Oh, come now,
stayed
darling.
Home nights, didn't take.
You got two left feet.
I wasn't taking any chance. Didn't flirt, and you know that hurt. But I just couldn't do my cutie dirt.
You're an honorable
lad. Days were blue and nights were black. But I just knew she'd come back. Cause I love her. She loves me and say,
I would say that she's a very good girl.
Don't think there ain't no Santa Claus. I know darn well there is, because my cutie's due at 2:22 today.
You tell a wonderful story, John, you really do. My cutie's due at 2:22. She's coming through on a DC-2.
You got a girl in space.
I met each Boeing jet, but she hasn't shown up yet.
Friday airport.
Stayed home nights at the pad. It was awfully lonesome, Dad. What I mean, a nothing scene. Just me and a TV screen. Oh, the price was right most every night. In how those western stars can pay. But now she's coming, everything's okay.
That do make it okay.
It sure do, my TV set is staying dark. And if you don't dig the last remark, my cutie's due 2:22 today.
Bye, I'm off to meet that old choo-choo.
And I'm kinda late for the DC-2.
My cutie's due at 2:22 today.
Johnny Mercer and Bobby Darin slightly modernising the words of Leo Robin there. And whether it's a coincidence or not, how quaint that the running time of that version of My Cutie's Due on the 2:22 turns out to be 2 minutes 22 seconds. On March the 28th, 1905, Pandro S. Berman was born, and that is a vital fact for anybody who gives a fig for the popular song. Berman was the producer who was part of the business chaos that landed the RKO studios in the hands of the official receivers. And had it not been for him, the studio would have folded there and then, instead of staggering on for a few years more and leaving posterity priceless riches. Berman was the man who engineered the alliance between Fred and Ginger. And when a man achieves that, you feel inclined to wink at any minor indiscretions he might have committed. As it happens, Berman committed quite a few, which I'll come to in due course. His first two musical pictures, called Melody Cruise and Hips, Hips Hooray, had plots that sound like the product of a bunch of circus animals. And once the Fred and Ginger pictures were over and done with, Mr. Berman plunged himself into the production of Elvis Presley pictures, which when I discussed it with him, he seemed to think were the same in style and quality as the Fred and Gingers. We'll gloss over that little aberration and admit that when he made the screen version of The Gay Divorcee, he was changing screen history very much for the better. Even so, The Gay Divorcee was an odd affair. Berman's reputation today stands on the fact that he knew a good song when he bought it, which must be so because it was him who got Irving Berlin and the Gershwins and Jerome Kern to write for him. He loved people who wrote like that. He actually revered them and acknowledged to me that they were geniuses. And yet the case of The Gay Divorcee is distinctly odd. Adapted from the old Cole Porter show, The Gay Divorce, it took hold of Porter's 10 songs and it dumped 9 of them, including this one, which I should have thought was worth saving.
Mr. and Mrs. Fitch one day hit town, determined to play. Mr. and Mrs. Fitch, they were green, they were ambitious, and honey, they were rich. And so the crowd they called elite were fiercely fighting to meet the young, the attractive, and the rich. I keep using that word, Mr. and Mrs. Fitch. When they called for champagne, champagne arrived. An aeroplane, honey, the plane arrived. A private train, the train arrived, and when they called for cash, 29, the crash arrived. Now men who once knew Mrs. Fitch, they refer to her as a witch. While the girls who once loved Mr. Fitch said he always was a son of the rich. So, love and kisses, goodbye, Mr. and Mrs. Fitch. All these men that were crazy about Mrs. Fitch, you know what they call her now, poor thing. They refer to her as a witch. While the girls who once loved Mr. Fitch, they said, oh, honey, he always was a son of the rich. So love and kisses, wow, Mr. and Mrs. Fitch. Oh, honey, it's a shame to have that change and lose it, because I'm telling you the truth, the world forgets you, sweetie. Goodbye, Miss Fitch.
Pearl Bailey reminding us that when Pandra West Berman had the bright idea of converting The Gay Divorce on stage into The Gay Divorcee on screen, he behaved in a rather irreverent manner towards Porter's original score. And the Fitch number wasn't the only one which might have deserved more considerate treatment. There was another one which I've often thought of as the best of Porter's lesser songs. I know that sounds a bit like a contradiction, but Porter's work does seem to split into the great indisputable classics like I've Got You Under My Skin, In the Still of the Night and so on, and the beautifully fashioned but somehow not quite so exquisite songs which still bear the unmistakable Porter hallmark. Now, I did play this recording not so many programs ago, but the song seems so neglected and so graceful, so studded with little grace notes of the songwriter's art, that I see no harm in repeating it now. After all, you won't be hearing it if you ever see the screen version of the show.
After you, who could supply my skies blue? After you, who could I love? After you, why should I take the time to try? Who else could qualify? After you, who hold my hand and swear you never cease to care? For without you there, what would I do? I'd search but who else could change my tears into laughter after you?
Ella Fitzgerald, After You, one of the most affecting love songs in the score of Gay Divorce, but not the score of The Gay Divorcee. I remember asking Berman for the reason regarding the absence of almost the entire original score from the screen version. After all, if you can dump 9 songs out of 10, why buy the show? He gave me an utterly meaningless answer, but probably it was just a misjudgment at the time. Berman did make them sometimes. I ought to explain that The Gay Divorce was all about a rich lady who has to employ a professional correspondent to pretend to spend a night with her in order to comply with the divorce laws of those days. And that in the story, the hero is mistaken by the heroine for this professional correspondent. Therefore, there was much talk in the plot about the desirability of marriage. But getting back to Pandro Berman, once he realised that in pairing off Fred and Ginger, the studio had stumbled on its own salvation, he did behave like the perfect producer by hiring Irving Berlin to write the songs for a remake of The Gay Divorce. Of course, nobody actually admitted that that was what Top Hat was. But that is what it was when you think about it. Consider the following points. Both pictures are set in London and a seaside resort. In both pictures, Astaire plays a well-known American dancer. His friend in both pictures is Edward Everett Horton. Eric Blore is a waiter in one film and a valet in the other. In Gay Divorce, Eric Rhodes is an hysterical Italian correspondent. In Top Hat, he is an hysterical Italian dress designer. In both pictures, Fred and Horton go to a seaside hotel because of Ginger. The main plot device in both pictures is Ginger mistaking Fred for Eric Rhodes. Even the endings are identical, with Fred and Ginger happily tripping out of the resort together. Well, none of this is surprising because both pictures were written by the same man, one Dwight Taylor. And as it happens, he too was steeped in the folklore of popular song. How come? Well, Dwight Taylor was the son of the actress Laurette Taylor. And when he was 10 years old, his mother married the actor J. Hartley Manners, whose wedding present to his wife was a play. And this play inspired a song of the same title.
Peg of my heart, I love you. We'll never part. I love you, dear little girl. Sweet little girl. Sweeter than the rose of Erin. Are your winning smiles endearing, pig of my heart? Your glances with Irish art entrances, come be my own, come make your home in my heart. Peg of my heart, your glances with Irish art entrances, come be my own, come make your home in my heart.
Peg of My Heart, a song written in homage to a play written by the stepfather of the man who wrote Top Hat for Pandro S. Berman. Oh, what a tangled web we sometimes have to weave. These days, we tend to look back at Berman's career in the 30s and imagine it to be a succession of Fred and Ginger pictures. In fact, that wasn't quite true. In between Top Hat and Follow the Fleet, Berman made 2 other musicals which left egg stains all over the studio carpet. One, completely forgotten today, was called In Person, starring Ginger as a film star so keen to escape from her own fame that she walks about with a wig, glasses and false teeth. The wag said it was an improvement, but the songs have vanished without trace. One, I think, sounds promising. It was written by Dorothy Fields and Oscar Levant, and it was called Out of Sight, Out of Mind. just like the picture. But Pan Berman's other aberration of 1935 was his notorious attempt to bring opera to the Hollywood screen. A lot of people have tried this and ended up in comfortable beds. Berman admitted to me that after making this picture, he realized the American public didn't really want opera. As the rest of the world knew this before making the picture, this struck me as being comically naive. But clearly, the project must have been very close to Berman's heart, because as he talked about it, he went over to the bookcase and produced the original screenplay bound in leather. He kept showing me bits of it and stroking the bindings. Well, in retrospect, the picture starring Lily Pons did have one or two good moments provided by Jerome Kern.
I dream too much, but if I dream too much, I only dream to touch your heart again. I close my eyes to see your hand, your smile, your joy in loving me. We dance and sing, we steal a touch of spring. I dream of everything we two have known, and yet my dreams have shown. Perhaps I dream too much alone.
I Dream Too Much, the title song of Pandro Berman's operatic episode involving Lily Pons, known as the pocket collatura because she stood well over 4 feet tall. As to the picture all about a singer who marries a composer, you never hear of it these days. Even the music's faded away. The New York Times managed a wonderful contradiction at the time the picture came out by calling the music agreeably unimportant, whatever that was supposed to mean. Anyway, after I Dream Too Much, Pandro Berman put his Tosca outfit back in a wardrobe and concentrated on Fred and Ginger, with results that we all know about.
The weather is frightening, the thunder and lightning seem to be having their way. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day. The turn in the weather will keep us together, so I can honestly say that as far as I'm concerned, it's a lovely day, and everything's okay.
Yes, isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain? Going on your way, now you've got to remain. Yes, just as you walk going, leaving me all at sea. The clouds broke, they broke, and oh, what a break for me, babe. Now I can see the sun up high, they were calling us down. I can't see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter if the skies are gray. Baby, long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day.
Isn't this a lovely day to be caught in the rain? You were going on your way, now you've got to to remain. Just as you were going, leaving me all at sea. The clouds broke, they broke, and oh, what a break for me. I can see the sun up high, though we're caught in the storm. I can see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter if the skies are gray. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day. The sun up high, though we're caught in the storm.
Caught in the storm, babe.
I can see where you and I could be cozy and warm.
Cozy and warm.
Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter if the sky are gray. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely.
Lovely Day from Top Hat may be the greatest of all the Fred and Ginger pictures. Fred has reminisced about those days and described the time when he and Irving sat in a hospital waiting room while Mrs. Astaire was about to give birth any moment. The two men passed the time by playing gin rummy, and Berlin would distract Fred by talking of the songs for the next picture. Fred would get deeply interested, and then Irving would suddenly lay his cards down and say, gin. Then Fred got his revenge by finding out from the people at the studio which tune Irving was currently working on. And then he would whistle it during the card game in apparent innocence, striking terror into Berlin's heart that the tune he was still working on had already been written. Well, on one or two occasions it already had been, by Irving himself. Listen to this extended quotation from the waltz Always.
Maybe that is why you love me.
Maybe It's Because, one of Irving Berlin's songs from 1933. Before I leave old Pandro Berman, I ought to draw attention to another peculiar tactic he adopted during the period of the Fred and Ginger pictures. His lumbering of Fred with a partner who couldn't sing or dance. Well, that was Joan Fontaine, and we could all be scathing about her with a clear conscience because nobody was more scathing about her than Miss Fontaine herself, who once said that the picture put back her career 4 years. This was an aptly titled production called A Damsel in Distress, and I've had a lot of letters asking for a repeat of something I played about a year ago, a Gershwin song that was dropped from the picture and had not been heard of since until a Swedish lady called Lena Jensen found it.
When we met, I thought we two were very well matched. Nonetheless, you simply passed me by. My hair I'm restyling to make me beguiling. My face I keep soaping, hoping. Thinner, no starches at dinner. New hats I keep buying, sighing. Please pay some attention to me.
It. See you same time next week.
I've given up drinking and smoking and thinking. My smile I keep cheerful, fearful. You pay some attention to me. I'm handsome. I've had my nose shifted, yet here I am, darling, snarling. Please pay some attention. teeth I keep brushing. To you I keep brushing. My creatures I'm burning. Johnny, please pay some attention. Some attention to me.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.